This podcast is brought to you compliments of Kaspersky Lab, protecting more than 300 million systems worldwide against internet threats.
Okay, welcome back to the Digital Underground Podcast. I'm happy again to have Jeremiah Grossman from White Hat Security on the podcast. The last time we talked, Jeremiah, we were talking about you and your security career, but this time we're going to talk a little bit about the new browser that you guys released earlier this week called Aviator, which was kind of an interesting idea. I had no idea that you guys were even working on this thing, but it's been in development for a long time, apparently, right?
Development and testing, yeah. It was never, when it was originally envisioned, it was never designed to be a White Hat product, but more of a way we can protect ourselves internally.
Oh, okay. So you guys had been building it and using it internally at White Hat for a while. How long ago did all of that start?
Probably at least 3 years, but maybe even before that, if you really think about it. I mean, you, me, and everybody else, we all use browsers, and we all, as security people, do special things to them to kind of protect ourselves, whether you install, like, NoScript or disconnect, ad blocking and things like that, turn off cookies and all sorts of those things. And we do all those things all the time, so... What happened was, you know, White Hat started getting big. You know, we were no longer 10 people. We were 50 and then 100. And not everybody was a security technologist. And they said, well, you're talking about all these scary browser security things. So can we want to use the browser that you're using. And I said, well, it's going to be kind of hard because you have to do, like, you know, 18 billion things. So it just kind of, yeah. we just productized it and said, this is basically the build that we're using. All White Hat employees, you are encouraged but not required to use it.
Okay. So obviously this is not what White Hat's actual business is. You know, building consumer applications is not really what you guys do. So I assume this was kind of a side project for a bunch of the guys?
It wasn't even a project. I mean, that is even, like, overstating it. Yes, you're absolutely right. So White Hat, we're in the website security business. It's what we've been in since day one, helping protect websites. But it's the other half of web security that doesn't get enough attention. It's the security of the browser. Browsers must be able to defend themselves against a hostile website. And right now they really can't, at least in their default state. So this was an internal security product meant to protect us. And then other people outside the company saw that we were using it and would also ask us what browser we're using. And rather than continuing saying, well, I use my browser, and they go, what browser is that? And I go, no, it's mine. They go, well, can I have it? No. So at some point in time, we said, you know what, let's just let everybody have it. And we had to productize it and put documentation and logos and stuff on it. So that's what we did.
Right. So for people that haven't really had a chance to check it out yet, it runs on OS X right now, and it's built on the Chromium code base. What are some of the things that you guys did from the get-go to sort of make security and privacy sort of, you know, run the way that they should?
Sure. So again, as for, you know, this is a security audience, right? So it's not going to be terribly new to them. So, you know, it comes default with tracker blockers and ad blocking via the disconnect plugin. Very cool stuff if you're not directly familiar with it. The plugins do not run automatically, so we turned on click to play by default, which is not how it's set up in Chrome. We turned on third-party cookie blocking. Big one for us, since Robert Hansen and myself have been talking about this forever, there's no more intranet hacking. So, you know, when you go to a website, that website can force your browser to make RFC 1918 requests to hack intranet devices. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's not allowed anymore. So we blocked all that. So it's a list of things like that, which you can do on your own. If you knew to do all your own and you did all the steps, we're just trying to make it easy.
Okay. So, yeah, those are basically all the things that, you know, me and a lot of the other people probably listening to this might have already had set up on Chrome or Safari or whatever other browser they use. But as you said, they're sort of set up that way from the get-go, from out of the box with Aviator. What are the, if you have any, since this wasn't really even meant to be a project, as you said, are there any plans to have it run on Windows or, you know, Linux or anything else at some point?
Oh, absolutely. That was by far the number one request we got from people was, where's the Windows version? And the only, you know, it's kind of funny, like usually products don't come out on Mac first and Windows guys are going, yeah, come on, give us a, that's not
right.
But at White Hat, we're all standardized on Mac on the desktop. So it was built for us. So one might expect that we released the yeah. X10 one first. But the thing is, it kind of helped out because it's a smaller community and we can stub our toe on a few design choices that we made first before blowing the beta, if you will. It looks like we got our focus and feature set right. So the Windows one is something we're definitely going to do. It's just a matter of when, just pulling the right resources together. And so thankfully, the community helped us make those particular choices. So, yeah, there'll be a Windows version. We just don't know when yet.
Right. Okay. What other kind of requests did you get from people or suggestions or criticism?
So there was a ton of little bug fixes here and there, QA in the browser. We have a newfound respect for our peers out there now at Mozilla and Google. QA is huge, so little breakages here and there that we'll have to smooth out. Then there was the request for source code. That was a big one, and probably something we should have done in day one. We just didn't in our rush to get it out there. I can talk all about that. What else? Some of the plugins aren't supported in the Chrome Web Store. So all the Chrome plugins should work in Aviator because from the same pedigree, only the Chrome Web Store for some reason does user agent sniffing. We don't know exactly why. So we have to play games so that you can install it easily. So just those little things we have to work out.
Yeah, that's weird. I think the first comment I saw somebody post on Twitter after you guys released the browser was, where can I get the source code?
Oh, yes. So it's probably a huge oversight and our fault. Sorry. So Chromium is mostly, at least the Google parts, is BSD licensed, but it does include a whole bunch of GPL stuff. Our changes were all restricted to the BSD stuff, so strictly speaking, we don't have to release the source, just like you can't get the source to Google Chrome. You can get it for Chromium, but not Chrome. So if we're going to continue development on this support for a larger community, we have to find a revenue stream, and we have no idea what that is just yet. But what we don't want to do is shoot ourselves in the foot by putting all the source code out there prior to us making those decisions.
Okay.
So it's not like we're against it. We probably will. It's just a matter of when. We just need a little bit of time.
Right. And I'm assuming that you guys yourselves obviously went through and audited this thing pretty heavily since you've been using it for a while internally.
Well, the thing is, like, we're the only ones that added code to it. So it came from Chromium. I'm pretty sure there's no backdoors in Chromium and that crazy stuff like that. We assume that since it's open source and it's all there. And then whatever changes we made were our changes. Like, you know, whatever people are downloading is exactly what we use internally. So we're not doing anything particularly different with it.
Okay. And you mentioned trying to figure out some revenue stream for it, and obviously that probably isn't going to include ads, since
definitely that's
Is there? I mean, it's not like you guys have to make money off this thing, but if you're going to pour some development and QA resources into it, it would probably make sense.
You know, it's kind of a. We're exploring all kinds of different revenue streams. Maybe you put services in the browser to do always on SSL VPN. Maybe you straight up licensing the thing. I mean, the fact that over 1 billion people all these browsers and no one pays a licensing fee for them is really, really weird. I don't know of any other class of software like that. So maybe we just say $5, $10, $20 per Aviator license and we pick a straight customer model like that, maybe that'll work.
Yeah, it is. It's the most bizarre software model, the browser. I mean, I guess we have Netscape to thank for that, but it just, I guess that's just the way it evolved is, it was free at the beginning and it's always been free, and you're going to take a whole bunch of ads and tracking to, to earn that free.
Yeah, so, like I said, maybe people will be willing to spend a few dollars for, the incentives are in the right way. We'll see. I mean, fortunately, when you're in the free model, you have to get a large number of eyeballs to make those economics work. The thing is, I'm just speculating here that if we license it directly for a few dollars, we don't have to get substantial market share to do really well and to keep supporting the browser.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. As you said, you're talking about a billion people on the internet or however many it is. You get a tiny little fraction of those and it would be worth your while.
And one of the things we learned, you know, if you go to the Chrome Web Store today where all the extensions are, or the Firefox add-ons, I don't know what they call it, the store there. You know, I want to say three of the five extensions there are all security and privacy related with millions of users. I mean, it's not like it's an unheard of, you know, it's a valued proposition there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing that people do when they get a new machine, you know, is go and install NoScript and, you know, all these privacy-enhancing extensions. Do you know how many people have downloaded it at this point? I know it's only been a few days, but
it was Austin only. We did no traditional marketing, no press releases. We didn't brief the press, you guys. We didn't talk to any analysts. We just said, here's the browser that we use. Hope you like it, kind of thing. And our blog melted in the first couple hours because we weren't prepared for this sort of thing. So I think right now we're like day four or five in, and there's over 5,000 downloads, which we're pretty shocked by. So,
wow, that's awesome. That's great. Nice. All right. Well, this is cool. I'm glad that you guys did this. It's a pretty cool experiment, I think, to see a security company actually go out and say, okay, listen, this is one of the tools we use internally. We think it would be useful for, you know, a wider audience. You know, here, have at it. I'd kind of like to see other security companies do that. I don't know what other tools I'd, you know, would put in that class. Like, you know, browser is ubiquitous, but I'm sure there's other things that other companies use that could be helpful for regular users as well.
So we're very much very new to the building of the browser game, you know, so we're going to learn a lot in this particular process. But what we have learned is it's very, very difficult. One, browser security is not trivial. There's only a few people in the world that really know it well, collectively speaking. So you have to have that. You have to have the physical know-how. Then you have to have a tremendous amount of company resources to push it out there. So that's pretty huge. And then you have to have the credibility to go with it. So that's probably why, at least in the browser space, there's tons of secure privacy-oriented browsers, but they don't get traction, probably because they're missing one or two of the other attributes that you need.
Yeah. And, I mean, if you're a guy working on a browser at Microsoft or Google or even Apple, you know, if you run into a problem, you can probably walk down the hall and find somebody that wrote that particular code and ask them the question. But it's a little more difficult for you guys since that's not your business.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, like, we talk to their security and privacy guys at those companies a lot, and we talk about some of the issues that Robert Hansen and myself have been talking up for years. And what has always been difficult for us is not like they disagree with us on the problems that we see. They actually agree. It's just they have to resist the incentives on those particular organizations. So even if they know how to make it more secure and more private, they can't do it anyway. So we have different incentives.
Absolutely. Yeah, that, which I think is one of the reasons it's a great idea for you guys to have tackled it rather than a huge software company like those guys. So, all right. Well, thanks a lot, Jeremiah. This is really cool. I'm glad you guys had the chance to put that out, and I look forward to seeing how it goes, see some updates, and see how people like it once they actually get it installed and start using it.
We are too. Thanks very much, John. It's an exciting time.
Yeah, you got it. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Compliments to Kaspersky Lab, a world leader in internet threat protection for small, medium, and large enterprises. Visit Kaspersky.com for more information about their line of premium protection solutions.